Hey, I'm Derek.
And I'm Noah, and you're listening to A Bite Of,
where we take our current favorite pop culture obsession and we enjoy it one nibble at a time.
And today's nibble is a nibble that we've already done. Well, character. We're nibbling on Loki. Loki is back.
Season two of Loki.
Season two. Second helping, if you will. Mm-hmm. Loki is back. It's been 2 years. I think this is actually the first time we're covering a season two of a thing.
I thought that, but sort of tech, like in this way, yes. But we also did Heartstopper 1 and Heartstopper Season 2.
True.
But episode by episode, this is the first time we're doing it.
That is very true. Yeah. So, hey, new things, new timelines. We're time slipping in between everything.
We're really branching out from what we usually do.
Okay, we got it. We got to get to the episode. Housekeeping stuff, follow us on socials. We got a Patreon. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. We're actually on a mission to get 200 reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, if you want to. If you listen on Spotify, just throw some stars our way. Apple Podcasts, if you haven't given us a rating, just scroll down and do that. You know, that'd be nice.
They do hide it a little bit.
They do.
It's like fine print underneath all the episodes.
You have to scroll. Scroll a little bit.
You have to scroll a little bit.
Work for it.
Please give your little thingies a go for us. We'd really appreciate it.
Right.
So, of course, spoiler alert, if you have not watched this first episode of season two, you probably should.
Yeah, we don't want you to get pruned out of this timeline by us spoiling everything. Miss Minutes will be so mad.
Oh my God, I'm loving all these puns. All right, so let us officially take a bite of Loki season two, episode one, Ouroboros.
Ouroboros. Fun.
Yes.
At first, when that title came up on the screen, I was like, oh, who?
Yeah, they were like, his name is Obi. Wink. It's actually really cool.
So, okay, we recently rewatched season one, talked about season one, fresh in our minds. Going into season two, after this first episode, how do you feel? How do you feel being back with the TVA and Loki and the variants and everything?
Let me tell you something.
Okay.
I didn't realize how much I missed Loki and the TVA and Mobius. Until episode.
Okay, it sounds like you're doing a sales pitch.
Let me tell you something, folks. Step right up. You're going to get something that you loved.
Now it went to Carnival.
They're all clowns at the TVA. Yeah. They're just puppets.
Right.
But yeah, I just think that, again, 2 years ago, while doing our rewatch, I was like, oh yeah, this was really a lot of fun. But I feel like that this first episode, if this is any indication for what season two is going to be, they're cranking everything up. I think on some level, this even felt campy to me in the best way possible. Just like where we're going with costuming, where we're going with new characters. It's just going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's, you know, at first I was not worried, but I was surprised that the creative team is different. You know, I think some of the writers that weren't the head writers are still back, but we have writers for Moon Knight in here. And we also have, you know, Kate Herron isn't the director of the season. So I was like, oh, she really did a good job with the first one. How are they going to replicate that? And just going off of the first episode of season two, it feels different, but the same, right? It feels like the pacing is a little quicker.
Absolutely.
For the first episode, we have not seen the four episodes, like they didn't send us our screeners.
We're waiting.
So we're watching it just with you guys. And so the first episode, great, great premiere. I think it is they did a good job of getting us back into the familiarity of it, but also being like, oh no, it's going to keep going. Cause this happens right after the finale of the first season.
And I think one of the things that really works for us is that we've already been introduced to all these people, to this place. We know exactly what's going on because it was a little slower in season one because they had to set it all up. We had to learn what everything was. But now we're already there. We already know what's happening. And the fact that we start exactly where we left off felt perfect. That's exactly how we wanted to do it. I didn't want to have to wade through things and wait until kind of things were uncovered. We're right there. He's on the run from who he realizes is not his Mobius and not his Hunter B-15.
Yeah. Yeah, this... Okay. I'm going to say, I don't want to start off with a critique, but I did feel like the cliffhanger of the first season of him showing up at a TVA that is different because there's a Kang statue and also Hunter B-15 and Mobius aren't our Mobius and Hunter B-15 that we know. They don't know him. I do feel like they kind of got over that quickly. It was almost like a cop-out, I feel. Mm. But I am also glad, right? It's, do we want an entire season where we don't have our Mobius and B-15 and all the characters that we already know? And then we're going to have to rebuild again and all that. So I think it was a good cliffhanger. They did cop out, and, you know, almost like when they brought our Loki that we have now back up to speed with Endgame Loki.
Sure.
So I appreciate it, but I also am like, okay, that's fine.
You're going to let it, you're going to let it slide.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Okay. I thought sliding was something that I was like, no. Are you going to go to
time? Well, there was that series Sliders, right? Remember that?
No.
They went through, they slid through.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Time slipping.
But yeah, I think that I could see where you're coming from in that sense. But I know that we kind of were both thinking, we said it in our rewatch of season one, that we didn't want to spend too much time there. Now, we spent barely any time there.
Thankful.
Yeah, but I'm glad that we didn't. I feel like it really, the pace was him running and we were running along with trying to figure out what was going on.
They actually did a really good job in this first episode of setting up stakes, but like they weren't necessarily stakes to save the world, right? They were stakes for themselves, you know, because Loki is time slipping. He's going into the past. He's going into the future. He's not able to stay in the current timeline. So we find out that it's not necessarily an alternate version. It's just past TVA, not another TVA, which begs the question of the King statues, right? I want to just mention that. So in the past, he openly was like, I am the person overseeing all this. But where we are in the present, he's not. He hid behind those, you know, the timekeepers, those three people, and he hid all of those statues. So he erased the memories of all of the TVA agents of him. But why?
Mm. I think you have some good points. Interesting points in the sense that they're not branch jumping. He's not branch slipping. It literally is time slipping. So I think that's a very good point to remember, because when we saw that last scene of season one, we thought, oh no, he's in a different branch. But you're right. It's not. It's just the past. It's a different time of the same branch. And this is the sacred timeline, I'm guessing.
Well, it's a, yeah.
I do wonder, though, as far as Kang covering up his statues and the murals and all that, it makes me feel like something happened where folks at the TVA or someone was not happy that it was him, because they saw that it was him ruling for his own good and not really for everyone. So then he had to wipe their memories and plaster it all over. Like, that's what I think the reasoning would be behind that.
And maybe it just is easier to have a step removed from you being the boss and orchestrating it, and easier for you to orchestrate everything while having like Android buffers in between that.
Right.
So I'm curious. Yeah. Hopefully that's going to be an answer, right? I think we're going to figure out why it's not how it was in the past and it is now. So it's going to be a revelation that I hope that we get, because I do feel like they actually made us more scared of Kang in this episode than they did in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. Like, I did feel like he was menacing, right? And there were some really good moments. But the way when Loki is trying to explain to the room of judges and Mobius and everything, and the horror on his face and the need to, like, get them to realize, like, how dangerous this is, he really sold it. I was like, I'm scared. Like, I know who this person is, but I'm scared with how you're acting. And that goes to Tom Hiddleston's credit for how he's acting. But I did feel like they really amped up the menacingness that is Kang.
And when we look at the Kang that's in Ant-Man, I think the stakes are him maybe taking over the quantum realm, whereas this is sort of all time, which is a much bigger threat. And I think for Loki in this moment, he's literally just met the man, saw him eating an apple, got pushed out of a time door by who he thought was one of his closest confidants. So all of Loki is at 12 in this. And so I think that really does feed into where he is. And as far as him knowing, kind of, this is a huge revelation for him and he needs to warn everyone. And it is nice to see Loki sort of being the good guy, right? He's running through the TVA, going to his friends, saying, we need to figure this out. And I think that this is a big turn for the character of Loki.
I think that's what season one was, right? It's, I mean, who's to say that if he was put back on Midgard, would he go back to his ways? But I think he does love his TVA family, and he wants to make sure that they're okay.
Yes.
Also, they're the only ones that can help him from time slipping. And I can't not mention, I love that they still added comedy in this episode, right? And I love when they're in the elevator and he's time slipping and Mobius lets it slip, that it actually does look awful and he can't stand looking at it. And they pan over to that other TVA worker just terrified in the corner. It's so good.
Yeah, nothing like seeing someone in front of you look like they're being ripped to shreds and put back together again. Not the best. I will say that I love that every time he did time slip, he did the Loki hair flip.
Oh.
Which we all wanted.
I will say, I counted how many. There's five.
Beautiful.
Five hair slips. Hair flips throughout the entire first episode.
I really think that they missed an opportunity. So they did some, they paired up with McDonald's for this season. They paired up with Lucky Charms for this season. Why is there no, I don't know, Pantene Pro V, some sort of Vidal Sassoon tie-in?
We're only one episode in. There's five more.
LA Looks hair gel for getting that crinkly look that he has.
What's the Aquanet?
Yes. Oh my God.
Just bring it back.
So good. I just think that they're missing such an opportunity. But I agree. I loved the humor in this. And even when we're trying to figure out what's going on with the time slipping, that humor is still there.
Back to kind of the, not kind of, back to the actual need, the necessity, right? And telling the TVA about what's happening. So when Mobius and B-15 get called to the war room, the judges room, the council of judges, we do get introduced to two and one Mr. Sleepy Judge. I don't even think they said his name, which is hilarious. But we got Judge Dox and Judge Gamble.
Mm-hmm.
And this scene, I think, personally, I feel like is the best written part of this entire episode. Because when we get to OB and we get to repair and advancements, I have some, like, not issues, but I feel like they intentionally made it hard to follow because they didn't stop for a second to explain anything. I feel like this, they brought up some really good points and questions. So when B-15 is making her case of like what they're doing and why the TVA is crumbling and that they're all variants, like you had a life on the timeline, I think it brings up a interesting point of thinking about, okay, so is it okay to commit universal genocide for the betterment of the sacred timeline, right? Is it like, where is like the moral clause in like killing timelines and variants to support the sacred one? I think it's an interesting point to think about.
Yeah, I love B-15 stepping up to the mic in this moment and really standing their ground. I feel like our moral calamity in season one was the idea of free will. Can we really make our own choices? What does that mean? In season two, it feels like the question of the trolley problem or, you know, in Hot Fuzz, the greater good, right? What is the greater good?
Okay.
Hey, listen, Kate Dickey, she's from that area of Europe. So
Scotland?
Is she Scottish or is she Irish?
Oh, no.
I don't know. But I just think that that is really the... That's what's being driven through here. Why are we actually doing this? And I think there's also another layer of, is there a greater good? Or are we just serving some random person's purpose?
Well, it brings to question. So there's a few layers that happen in this, right? It's leaving the first season. We're like, yeah, they shouldn't be taking variants from the timeline and deciding who gets to live and die. Prune. Just because they decided to miss the bus that day, right? And create a branching timeline. But also, Loki poses the question, or he more says it to himself with Mobius, wait, was he right? I don't know if he's right. Was he the best version of what is the bad versions to come? And it's a dilemma, right? And I think as we go through the season, hopefully, or even when we get to the further stuff like Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars, I think it might become apparent that he who remains probably was the best bet, because now who knows, maybe all of these other Kangs are able to start a universal war again. But to her point, man, it's who's to say, like, why are they able to do it, right? Why are you able to just prune branches of this timeline? It's a dilemma, but I like that dilemma. I think it gives stakes to the entirety, but it also gives stakes to personally each individual one of these characters.
I had a thought about the Miss Minutes film that was in this particular episode. And it almost seemed like what Miss Minutes was explaining was actually a little different than what we saw the TVA doing in season one. The TVA, it felt like they were just pruning variants. You made the mistake, that's it, you're gone. You've changed the timeline, that's it. In this one, as far as the butterfly effect is concerned, if you step on the butterfly, they're just going to bring another butterfly to where you are. So what does that mean? Who put that sort of new rule or new thought into order? You know, is that another Kang, or was that Sylvie?
That's just Miss Minutes.
Omnipotent, omniscient, amazing Miss Minutes, who might be the one behind all of this.
Probably.
Actually,
I would be really happy if Tara Strong was behind this entire saga. It'd be amazing.
What if at one point Miss Minutes is there and then she like dematerializes and Tara Strong actually walks through the human and she's like, hey, y'all, it's me, the one who's been running it all. She could do that. She's Tommy Pickles, okay? She's Raven.
Very true.
She is.
Let's keep naming.
I also love these three in this war room, right? Our judges and generals, everyone that's here. And as I was thinking it over, they, to me, right? It's interesting that there's this whole room with maybe, 15 chairs in it, and there's only three people at the helm.
There's only three mics.
That's very true. And it felt like to me, you know, Snoozosaurus there, he's representing past time. And it feels like Dox is representing present. She's not willing to stop and think. She wants to go and fix what's happening now. And then Gamble is future. Gamble saying, wait a minute, maybe something is wrong. How can we fix this for later on? So they're just, to me, it felt like a big metaphor for time, past, present, and future. The past is already sleeping. It's gone. They can't do anything about it. You can take action in this moment, or you can stop and think about how it's going to affect other things.
But what about X5? What's his story aside from hating jet skis and saying that directly to Mobius' face?
He's mommy's pretty little boy.
Yeah.
He said, he said forehead to forehead, I love you. Like, we've never seen a relationship like that in the TVA. Like, so it was weird.
Well, Hunter B15 had all of what we, all of our expressions, right? It was just, okay.
He said, odd. Mommy loves you. We'll take care of this. Don't worry, little baby.
She went from Game of Thrones.
You know the scene we're talking about.
To The Witch.
You know the scene we're talking about.
To this. Like, she has constantly made viewers uncomfortable by just doing, like, just sitting there.
Yeah.
And just being accepting whatever affection is happening.
This was her sharpest look, though, I will say, in the uniform with the hair pulled back. In the witch, it got bad. And then, you know, the other one with the moon door, her hair was windblown, so she couldn't help it.
Amazing. I'm very creeped out by her, and I don't know what her deal is. I'm very curious to see what X5 and her deal is, because there's a part later on where B15 sees all the agents going in through a time door to go after Sylvie, but it looks like all of the agents after Sylvie?
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
Right. So, and so why is Dox so hellbent on taking care of Sylvie? Is it just because Dox is so regimented in the way of the TVA and Sylvie is seen as a variant and that's it? You get rid of variants, or is there something else at play?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's still people that are brainwashed that need to be unbrainwashed, and hopefully our team can help with that.
Yeah. I kept going, I was like watching it going, Just show them. Like, oh, wait, Sylvie's the only one that can show them. Crap.
Before we leave this conversation of the moral clause of pruning branches and everything, I think looking forward into after this, right, we're going to have more multiverse stuff. We've gotten some movies and some other stuff in the TV shows. Do you think So like if Kang Dynasty, right, say something happens where it was like, oh, this movie actually took place in another universe and it actually wasn't here. But say none of that happens and everything is happening in the 616 universe or the 199999, whatever it actually is. Do you think that they would have to make us care about the other universes? Because, I mean, I'm just feeling like, okay, like, I hope our characters, like our 616 is okay. Do you think that you would need them to show us, like, you need to care about these because this is what's at stake?
Personally, I don't necessarily think that we need to learn that much about the other timelines. I think as long as our main crew are the ones that are trying to save them, that's our emotional bond to it and saying we want them to succeed. I mean, would it be nice to get a little backstory of some of the other variants? Yeah, I think that would be cool. But personally, I don't think we need to live in that much because that kind of feels like that's what if is about.
Right.
Right.
So I mean, we're just losing the animation show. Right.
I mean, what do you think? Do you want to learn those stories?
I mean, I think kind of a yes and no. If the road to Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars is a long one, we still have a few years to go. So anything can really happen. I think that they, to get that emotion that they want from people, because those are, right, those are the big ending Avengers movies for this phase. That's end game level stuff. So what are they going to do aside from probably killing some of our favorite characters to make us care about these universes dying? I guess it's just the moral obligation to like be sad about similar people like us no longer existing. But I was just curious how, like, where you stood on that and also where you stand on that, listener.
Comment below.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's kind of to say in Endgame, we didn't have to visit other galaxies.
Well, it wasn't a thing.
You know, right. He was just like, snap.
Well, it was a little more than that.
Oh, you're right. I should have more bling on. Yeah, snap, baby. That purple baby.
Okay. We have to talk about the new TVA member that we get in season two. Obi. Mr. Ouroboros himself. Mr. Repair and Advancements himself.
Title character. Okay? And guess what? We love him.
Instant favorite. I feel like he is 100% going to be people's favorites for the season.
Love him. It's Kihui Kwan. The man is just the most charming human on the face of the earth. The second he's on screen, you're falling in love with him. Let's also not forget to mention a brand new TVA jumpsuit with a little turquoise and an apron. I'm here for it.
I did like the addition of the apron because it just makes sense, right?
He's working.
Yeah, he needs all his stuff to get out. Also, Oscar winner. So just putting that out there.
Okay.
Oscar winner, Obi. So he is the one that helps, right? He helps our people. There is a lot of new terminology that comes about because of his involvement in the show. And I'm excited to see where his character or how far his character is actually intertwined with the plot. I have sneaky suspicion that maybe we can't trust him fully. I don't know. The whole story with Mobius not coming back for 400 years and Obi remembered him. Mobius did not. That gives me a little suspicion. I'm like, is he like upset about it? Probably not. I hope not. This is just theorizing, right? Mm-hmm, I hope he's totally fine and not orchestrating some things, but you know.
I very much hope so. But also we have to remember that these are people that have been brainwashed and think that there is one thing that they're all supposed to do. But I think there might be also something to say of, it seems like no one really visits him. So any run-in he might have with another person, he remembers, even sad. If it was 400 years ago.
It's sad. It's very sad.
It's very sad. I mean, he's just surrounded by those tubes.
Yeah. I mean, he seems in good spirits, right? And he doesn't really know what's going on in the greater TVA because when they go down there, he's like, what's going on? And when he sees the light flashing, that's when things get a little serious for him. But the whole concept of time travel, when it's introduced, right? And this scene in particular is really cementing, like, time travel is happening because Loki time slips to the past to Obi and tells him what's happening. So past Obi can create the temporal thing, the temporal shooter. Oh, what is it? Extractor. There we go. I'm like, there's a temporal loom. There's temporal energy.
Temporal mandibular joint.
Temporal aura extractor. I think that's what it is. There's a lot of more temporal stuff.
It was a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be, especially when it's used later on. I was like, wow, that thing is powerful.
So it was actually kind of cool to see Loki like reverse engineer the MacGuffin for this show. Loved it. I feel like that's the only time where MacGuffins are kind of, you know, this is fine because he went back and did it. So it makes sense that he has it now.
And we saw it in real time happening, which made it more fun. I think this was definitely, I was going to say this is one of the more fun scenes, but this whole episode was fun. But seeing Loki talking to Obi while Obi is talking to Mobius and getting the information and just going like, oh yeah, no, wait, I do have that.
Yeah.
It was like the editing was really great. The pacing was perfect.
It was good. Just
really, really great.
How do you feel? Are you a stickler for time travel rules? Or like because in Endgame, time travel is a specific way, right? Mm. It's like they took the Infinity Stones, they have to put them back because then the stuff that happens later on isn't necessarily going to happen because things were taken and changed. This one, it seems very much like what happened happened and it was supposed to happen. I feel like this is like the Lost rules of time travel where you don't remember it happening because your brain is going one way.
Right.
So when you go back, it was always supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. And so in real time, we're seeing Obi realize or remember what's happening because it's happening in the past and Loki's changing it, which is cool. But are you a stickler for stuff like that?
I am a stickler for things like that. You know, I'm a big kind of continuity person. I think a lot about logistics. You know, if you all remember me in Falcon and Winter Soldier, I was like, how do they get from here to there in, you know, 30 well, minutes?
That wasn't time travel.
You know what I mean? Okay, so there's something to be said about if these are the rules you're making for this world, then you have to stick to those rules the whole time. What makes it complicated, though, is that the Endgame rules seem different than the Loki rules, but Loki is existing in the TVA outside of time.
And time works differently, as we've heard many times.
It's very much the good place. It's the Jeremy Baramee situation.
It very much is. And I feel like it's interesting. We don't know where the TVA is, right? It's outside of space and time. But as we know about other things in the Marvel universe is, you know, the quantum realm is technically outside of space and time. So is it in the quantum realm in some way? Is it in the negative zone? Is it in some type of other place where, okay, fine. Yeah, the time travel does work differently because of what's happening. I'm fine with it either way. I feel like as a Doctor Who fan, years, seasons, decades of just wibbly wobbly, timey wimey stuff, it happens because that's what the story needs, right? Just accept it because that's what's going to happen. I think it's fine, especially this is like the MCU's version of Doctor Who. So I'm like, it's fine. I actually like this time travel. Give it to me more.
And I think that especially in the second act of this episode, we have to be willing to go with the rules that they're making, right? They got to get the temporal like aura extractor.
Aura.
I said that.
I thought you said oral.
No. Aura extractor to the... Okay, listen, you know when things get too complicated for me, I kind of lose what's happening.
Well, so that was my kind of my critique with this particular part with the Obi stuff. Phenomenal. And I think acting, shots, everything. But I feel like the writing, it was like, okay, there's these things that have to happen to push the story. So like, let's just confuse the hell out of people.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it's on purpose.
They succeeded.
But I liked it. I almost liked it because it's like, I guess why don't explain it to me. I don't need to know.
Oh yeah. Like, I guess at the base of it, I'm just like, they need to do this thing to save Loki. And then you're going skin. Oh, you know, big spacesuit. Yay. Right. You know, not actually really being like, but wait, how does this thing get him from the thing? And then why does it have to close in tense? Okay, whatever.
I am going to be honest. Whenever that stuff was happening and he was explaining a lot of it, I kind of looked over at you and I was like, I don't think he's not going to like this part.
The thing is that I think I have to just let it happen.
Just.
Yeah. Just be like, oh, it's colorful. Duct tape. Oh. You know, I think if I think too hard about it, I'll get frustrated.
Right.
So it's just like, this thing needs to happen. for us to save Loki. Got it.
I will say the thing that makes me keep Obi in my peripherals is that he made the guidebook to the TVA. He's the one that's like, this is how this is supposed to happen. This is the only way we can do it. I'm going to put you in a very dangerous Among Us suit and send you out into this.
It is Among Us.
Energy with branches of time whipping and stuff. And I'm just going to close it. It was part of me was just like, I mean, I know that you want to save it and you want to power up the TVA again and maybe retrofit something to make the timelines go into a sacred one again. But I don't know. It seems a little like you knew he knew too much of how to do it, right?
What is your real role here at the TVA, sir?
Right.
And I mean, if you think about it, his name, right, is a god. It's the god of, it's like a symbol, of infinity.
Right. It's the world serpent.
Right. So that's a really interesting thread there. Mm. He just knows how to make it keep going in one way over and over and over again.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting that it doesn't seem like his memory was necessarily wiped, because depending on how far back Loki went to Obi, right? I mean, why didn't Mobius and B-15 know who Loki was, even though he went back into the past? So it seems like Obi doesn't get his memory wiped.
And is there something to be said about maybe not everyone at the TVA is a variant? Maybe Obi is an original. He's an OG OB. He has always existed as that.
I mean, he could have, right? I mean, the Ouroboros is just eating one's tail. Just a infinite thing of whatever. So it could be. There's obviously more to him, right? They wouldn't name him something like that and wouldn't introduce him in this way if there wasn't more to this character.
Agreed.
I got my eye on you.
Okay.
I love you.
Okay.
But I got my eye on you.
I'll give you a kiss, but I'll keep my eyes open. When Mobius was on that bridge, putting the stick thing in the round thing, didn't that give you like sort of Asgard feelings?
It actually gave me Quantum Realm feelings. Like out there, it just felt more Quantum Realm-y. I don't know if it's like the purples and blues and pinks and stuff, but it did give me that feeling.
Now, listen, everyone, please don't be mad at me. You know, sometimes I lose terminology. What is the name of Heimdall's bridge?
The Rainbow Bridge.
Oh, that's so easy.
You're gay.
It's true. Sound point.
You know, it's the Rainbow Bridge.
It's the Rainbow Bridge. It's Rainbow Road, but for Thor. But that's what it felt like to me. It felt like the Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah. You're gay. That's all you wanted to know.
Just motifs, I guess. Whatever. Remember when he put duct tape on his face?
Yeah.
That was funny.
Okay. So obviously everybody gets saved. I want to talk about the ending, right? So to get Loki out of time slipping, which I'm so thankful for that they like got over in the first episode, right? We needed to get over it because, to be fair, having to write 6 episodes of somebody that can slip in between time, that's a lot and would be hard to follow.
And I think the only way that it would be better is if he learned how to control it.
Right.
But if he's in the way he was doing it, yes, I agree. It would have been too much.
So he has to prune himself in whatever time he slipped into when his little clock that Obi gave him goes into the green. And so this last scene in this episode with him frantically go, I believe it's in the future. It has to be in the future because the TVA seems like it's crumbling.
Yes. And we also see the glimpse of the skin question mark in the side of the computer.
That is true. So for sure, it's a fact that it is in the future. I don't know why. Usually whenever I'm saying a fact or a thing that happens, I'm like, probably, kind of, sort of.
It's because you never want to say something solidly because in the MCU, it could not be that at all. So it's like, just to be safe, let's say maybe.
And then just cut out the maybe part.
His name is Loki. Maybe.
So in the future, and everything's crumbling around. He can't find a pruning stick, I guess. But this part was so frustrating. It was well done. And I was very tense. And I was like, what is going to happen? Mobius is going to die. Is this what this season is going to be about? Delete it. I don't want it. Obviously, everything worked out fine. But him not running was kind of frustrating. But so we get a phone, right? And it's leading Loki to the elevators. It looks like he's never seen a phone before, which I don't know why he didn't answer. I would have answered it like, this is weird. Who's calling at a time like this?
The random phone in the hallway is ringing in a very, you answer the phone. Yeah.
But then out of the elevators, Sylvie, who looks very different. She has a really cool, like kind of mullet.
Kind of mullet, but not. Ooh, I love it.
Love it. And she says, oh, there you are. And then he gets pruned. So somebody behind him prunes him. Who do you think it is?
I think it's Loki.
Future Loki?
Yes, because we, in this, right, it's all linear. So just because past Loki or present Loki has gone to the future doesn't mean that Loki in the future doesn't exist. And the fact that when she sees him, she says, there you are, means that she's expecting to see Loki.
Or one of them.
Right.
Right.
But she doesn't, in her mind, in my mind, the Loki that's supposed to be there is the Loki that's behind him.
So she's talking to the Loki behind him, not him.
Well, she thinks it's the Loki behind him. She doesn't know that there will be two Lokis.
Right. Oh, true, true, true. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it is probably a future Loki. I guess we'll see, because who else would it be, right? I mean, it could be future Mobius. It could, well, right? Because I guess he would have gotten pruned anyway because it would have happened, so Mobius would be alive. I don't know. See, this is where time travel gets like, wait a second.
Yeah, you can't think about it too much.
Speaking of, there is another thing that brings questions, right? So when Loki goes forward in time, back in time, when he time slips and he listens to the recordings that are in the wall in that judge's room, it's a conversation between Renslayer and Kang. Don't know which Kang it is. Is it He Who Remains? Which Renslayer is this? Is this future? Is this past? What is this? And it seems very much like they're in cahoots, but the stuff that's said and the way it's said, it's almost like it wanted to be heard by Loki or somebody in like specifically, because why did it play at that moment? It's interesting.
Yeah. And also if it was a secret conversation, why was it recorded?
Because it was in the room.
But I mean, like, he's Kang.
Just don't push the button.
He controls everything.
He was just leaning.
Click. Whoa, I recorded it on accident.
So this episode is missing a Kang. It's missing a Renslayer and it's missing a Miss Minutes. We did get Casey.
Yes. And I think that the way that Casey's going to come more into this is him carrying around the guide to the TVA.
He was studying it quite a bit.
And he always has it. And they made such a big deal of, not a big deal, but they made a point to bring it up that I feel like he is going to be our guide to the guide. He's going to know the rules. He's going to know the way that they're going to have to do things.
But isn't that Obi? Obi's the one that wrote it.
Mama, Obi's busy in the basement.
he's not got allowed bigger to leave. Things.
Yeah, he's not going with them.
That is true. Maybe he'll have some insight that Obi might not have had when he originally wrote it. I did like that he listens to the podcast, and specifically the same exact podcast that Mr. Mark Spector listens to.
Really?
Moon Knight.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
You know, the people from Moon Knight are on this one. So I did like a little callback to Moon Knight.
I mean, if you feel overwhelmed by your choice of podcasts in our present day, imagine being at the TVA and having a choice of podcasts from all branches of the timeline.
Every existence. I wonder what an alternate version of our podcast is.
Straight.
Better.
Roasted.
Straight and better. No.
Straight and better.
Those two don't go together.
What up, bros? This is a bite of, and then it goes like boing.
Ew.
Right?
So it's like the douche from Parks and Rec.
Yes, yes. Mm,
no, thank you.
That's just one of the alternates.
Okay. Wrapping this up, we have a mid-credit scene, post-credit scene, whatever you want to say. After the initial credits, we have a new scene. It shows Sylvie.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Fresh off of killing He Who Remains. She's in Boxton, Oklahoma, 1980-something.
Yeah.
But it's specifically the title card at the bottom says branched timeline, meaning this is a different timeline than we had. Because remember, she kind of lit it on fire in that area in whatever timeline that was.
She gave him the old pokey.
Yeah. She goes into a McDonald's. And she sees the world for the first time being a free woman. She sees people in love. She sees friends. She sees a lot of food with no dead faces. And she wants to try it all.
Right? Imagine she's been jumping from branch to branch for her entire life, probably eating creatures we've never even thought of.
The ones that she said. She's like, I don't want possums. I don't want rats. I don't want... That's probably what she's been eating.
And they're like, how about a chicken nugget?
Yeah. I will say, like, it is kind of sad because she's been jumping from apocalypse to apocalypse. And I guess, you know, the minimum wage grind is better than jumping from apocalypse to apocalypse.
And you get to just exist.
Yeah.
And the things, maybe it's like the things that we take for granted, eating McDonald's with our friends and laughing, seems so special.
Well, she never had it too. Right? So yeah, I don't blame her for wanting to work there immediately. And I'm very excited to see the following up scenes of her working there. And then what we've seen, presumably, is Loki finding her there. And she's like, what can I get you? You know, I'm very excited for that. So going into episode two, we have who called, who pruned, and where to next. Where are all those agents going?
Yeah, I guess this really did close this little piece of the puzzle. We stop Loki from time slipping. He's in the correct timeline. But where do they go from here? We have Doc's on the run trying to find
something,
do something. She's with X5 doing whatever they do. And now we have B-15 and our little team here setting out to do what? Find Sylvie, I guess would be the next step.
Right. Yeah. They have to find Sylvie. They have to figure out what's going to happen now because he who remains is dead.
Rip.
And the timelines are going crazy.
But I mean, let's not forget that at the end of Ant-Man, there was a bunch of Kangs yelling in a room somewhere.
Oh, the Council of Kangs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that council is there somewhere.
Yeah. Well, the exiled Kang, the Kang the Conqueror that we know, the big bad. I mean, who knows if he's going to show up? I have a feeling he might show up.
Surprise, you didn't really kill me.
Yeah.
Remember time travel?
So next week, we have episode two.
Let's do it.
Dose.
Woo!
All right.
Very exciting.
That's it. Oh, no, rating. We have to rate it.
Oh.
My God. Rate this episode out of 5. What do you give it?
5.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
I really enjoyed it.
Mine's a 4.
Oh, my God.
There was no Miss Minutes.
But there was there?
There was no Miss Minutes.
She didn't. She, but
what, nope.
What about the butterfly thing?
She, that doesn't count. She wasn't in it.
Okay. You said that's a training video.
And I really liked it. I did feel like they kind of, the cliffhanger and everything from the last one into this one, I was like, okay, it's a little bit of a cop out. I understand why you did it, but you know, it's a 4. And that's, I feel like it was a great episode. It was shot really well. The set design was beautiful. I just, let me see a little more.
Okay. All right.
Maybe in the next episode will be a 5.
Hey, let them rise to the challenge.
All right. Next week.
Next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.